This is Around the A, a weekly look at the top stories, news, and interviews from the NHL's top developmental league with your hosts, David Foote and Patrick Williams on the Sports Podcasting Network.
It is Around the A, hosted on the Sports Podcasting Network. David Foote and Patrick Williams back with you for another week. And if you liked last week's show, we're glad you're back with us again. If it's your first time tuning in, thanks for joining us as we try to educate and inform people about the number one developmental league for the National Hockey League, the AHL. Got a lot of good stuff coming up on the show. We're going to recap the week that was in the opening week for the AHL. We're also going to chat with a veteran executive in the world of hockey, Patrick, as you had a chance to meet up with John Ferguson Jr. over the past week.
Yeah, that was, I was pretty excited to get that interview. I think the thing I found interesting about him is he's worked at every level and just every different position in the game, everything from a player to an agent to a scout, and now he's on the management side. So he really, I think, understands the business from all different sides, different angles. And I think the other thing I really like about talking with him is, you know, he certainly projects a very old school mentality in a lot of ways. His father was John Ferguson, the famous, player for the Montreal Canadiens way back when, and later on a coach and general manager himself. So he has a lot of those foundations and roots to him, but he's also part of a Boston system that's very progressive in a lot of ways. And they're doing some wonderful things. And every year you look at that Boston-Providence pipeline, and there's two or three, four players every year that seem to come up to Boston and really contribute in different supporting roles. Sean Corrali is a recent graduate, Carson Coleman, Matt Greslick, right down the list. Just guys that are able to come in and pretty seamlessly fit into roles there and supplement what they have there with, Zdeno Chara, Tuukka Rask, and kind of the mainstays, Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, of that Boston core that's been around for so long.
Yeah, and he's worked in some pretty big markets in Boston now. Some in the Toronto area may remember him as the former general manager of the Maple Leafs, so lots to talk about with him coming up later on in the show. We'll take a quick second to remind you that we are available now on Google Play, on Spotify, and by the time this podcast gets to air, we should be on Apple Music as well. We're waiting for them, as well as everywhere else that you get your podcast just about. And again, big thanks to Kev Laramie at the Sports Podcasting Network for helping us out with that side of things. Also, we're going to launch the social media game this week at Around the A Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you want to get in touch with us, if you have questions, if you have suggestions on guests, whatever it is, we'd love to hear from you at Around the A Pod on social. And, as much listener engagement, I think, as we can get on this show, the better off we'll be.
Absolutely. I agree. I mean, I think, as media, sometimes it's easy to be in your own little bubble and not necessarily always be in touch with what fans are talking about and what their concerns are and what their interests are. And, I think that's one of the cool things about a podcast is that it tries to bridge that gap and to kind of bring the different sides closer together and get a little bit more of that conversation flowing. So, yeah, we are absolutely eager to hear from some of our listeners and the fans out there. It's such a disparate league. This is a league that stretches from all the way from San Diego, California, all the way up to Laval and a lot of places in between. So it can be a little hard, I think, at times for everybody in the league, especially with the nature of the schedule being so heavily divisional, to kind of understand what's going on elsewhere. But, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to sort of bring the league under one umbrella and, just bring all the cool stories that are happening everywhere among the 31 different NHL and AHL clubs.
Yeah, and we should mention that while we're based in the East, we're going to do our best to connect with the teams and with the fans in the Western Conference as well, because it's almost a different world out there when you get into the Western Conference of the American Hockey League with the travel, with the schedule changes. So we're going to do our best to connect with that side of the league as well.
Yeah, and I really want to I can't echo that point enough. I was based with the Manitoba Moose before, and Yeah, they probably have the most grueling travel schedule of all, being where they are just geographically. And just the nature of the schedule always meant you had pretty much 6 to 8 game homestands, but on the flip side, 6 to 8 games on the road. So the team would be away for 10, 14 days at a time. So it's a whole different league as opposed to the East, where you have a lot more of the 3-3s. And, if you look at, let's take New York, Rochester, Syracuse, right nearby. Wilkes-Barre is not far. Or, you look at the 401 rivalry with Belleville, Toronto, and a short trip up to Laval. Yeah. So it's a much different world, and it affects player development in a different way. And teams have to manage their players differently. And I think it's one of the kind of the undercover storylines in this league year to year.
So if you're listening from a Western Conference market, never fear, we will get to you maybe as soon as next week as we continue on this path of, again, trying to inform and educate people about the American Hockey League. Let's start with what seemed to be one of the biggest headlines, aside from teams dropping the puck to start the season, the league and the Professional Hockey Players Association approving a new 5-year CBA. And I don't know if it's because it's the AHL and not the NHL, or because Dave Andrews and his team with the league did such a good job at setting things up, but it seems like it was a pretty seamless process to get this deal done.
Yeah, I agree. I think a few reasons. First, like you said, Dave Andrews, he's built a really solid foundation in his past 25 years at the helm here. And he has built a really good relationship with Larry Landon, who's the executive director at the Professional Hockey Players Association, which is essentially the AHL and ECHL equivalent of the NHLPA.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first thing, and I think that's a key factor. But I think the second part of that equation is players down here, they don't have the same freedom or leeway to really want to push the envelope too far and push the idea of a lockout or a strike, and the same thing for the American League in terms of the clubs. This is a business where they need to be on the ice if they want to make money. So I think all sides benefit and they realize that. So I think they come into negotiations every time the CBA comes up, with that mindset in place, and they're able to knock off a lot of their issues and check off that list and come to an agreement pretty smoothly. So 5-year deal, that's huge. That's going to be one of the final big items for Dave Andrews to check off his list before he hangs up the skates next year, so to speak. And that's a big big piece of good news to have things in place now for a long time.
How different of a deal is it compared to the CBA between the NHLPA and the NHL? Are there a lot of different things that have to be looked at?
There's a lot of similarities if you go through the CBA, and I've read both of them. I don't recommend that for anybody, but I've read both CBAs over the past few years. There's always some funny and interesting little things in there that I don't think any of us think about, like moving expenses and little details like that. But it's interesting in that regard. I don't see, from what I've heard talking to different people around the league, there aren't any major shakeups, so far. I think there could be, from what I hear, some different classifications for rosters and veterans. I don't have that pinned down yet, though. So, but I think for the most part, both sides are happy with where they're at. Nobody's looking to really, nobody was came into this looking to blow it up and start from scratch. So, and I think the other component of that is you're doing this all within the framework of the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
So they come first, obviously, in the pecking order. So any AHL CBA more or less has to fit within the parameters of the NHL and its CBA with its players. So I think for the most part, you're kind of it's a lot of micro issues down at the American League level that have to be sorted out. But once they get through them, everything else is within that broader framework of the NHL. So it doesn't benefit anybody to not be on the ice. If you're a prospect, you need to be on the ice. And then certainly if you're an American Hockey League owner, you benefit by having your guys on the ice. So I think that's the mentality they brought to it. And I think Dave Andrews and Larry Landon have just, they've had a great relationship. They both go back to the start of Andrews' tenure. So I think they understand where the other side is coming from, and they work together with that in mind.
You're listening to Around the A with David Foote and Patrick Williams. Again, you can find us on social media at Around the A Pod. If you want to get in touch with either Patrick or myself individually, Pat's at P Williams NHL. I'm at Footy on the Air. And again, we'd love to hear from you, get some feedback on how this thing's going, because again, it is show number two for us in what is a brand new venture that we just got into here at the start of the season. Speaking of the start of the season, Pat, lots going on across the American Hockey League. A lot of good hockey, tight games to start the season, and it seemed like for the most part teams were ready to go when the puck dropped for the first time.
Yeah, you know, the kind of, you know, scanning the entire league, I watched a number of the games either in person or via AHL TV. I was, for the most part, pretty impressed. Things were pretty smooth, which I think is no small feat, considering most of these teams don't have their rosters settled until a few days before the season starts. And on any given roster across the league, you're looking at probably a third to a half of the roster has turned over, and players at this stage of their career, the younger guys, they change a lot from year to year, and their development curve can be quite different from where they were a year ago. So I think for the most part, things looked pretty nice. There wasn't any major hiccups as far as I saw from different teams. I mean, they all looked like they were at least somewhat in sync, which I think you know, is a good sign going forward. And I think the other thing is the American League is smart. They keep the schedule this time of the year relatively light, you know, both for business reasons, because you're going up against things like the NFL and baseball, but also for purposes of getting these guys some practice time together, getting them settled in, and you know, and then once November hits, then the schedule picks up, and you know, teams are a little bit more cohesive.
Yeah, at the recording of this podcast, no team had played more than two games, so they do kind of ease you into things a little bit. I mean, here in Belleville, we had a game in Toronto on Saturday, and then we'll play two here at home this coming weekend against Binghamton, and then again, that's it for a whole week until the following weekend. So it's interesting that they kind of take that into account, all the up and down and early season roster fluctuation between the two leagues, because I mean, we had almost 200 transactions just between Ottawa and Belleville last season, and already there's been four or five between trades and injuries and call-ups, so it doesn't take long for that, you know, pipeline to really get busy.
No, absolutely. So it begins, and Belleville is, like you said, is a perfect example of that. They had such an extreme number of transactions last season. The remarkable part, though, is they're not all that alone in that regard. There are so many other teams, maybe not to the same extent, but you know, considerable turnover. You know, you're looking at you know, sometimes 40 to 50 players come through you know, from October, you know, until the end of the season. So imagine if you're a coach and you're trying to get your systems in place and you're trying to deal with players, many of whom are coming in from completely different systems over in Europe or at the college level or the junior level. So you have to get these guys all somewhat on the same page. And I think the coaches certainly appreciate when they can ease into things and, you know, not have that, you know, 3-3 and just the quick run of games coming at you one after another. So, you know, this definitely by design. And I think it benefits the league in the end, just to try and keep things to a minimum as players get settled. I think both on and off the ice. So I remember a lot of these players are living on their own for their first time. They're coming out of junior and they're learning how to live like an adult at the age of 20 years old. So they're trying to handle that. So I think anything you can do to ease that transition is a big deal as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you look at a guy again. I hate to talk so much Belleville, but it's, you know, what's closest to me this week. A guy like Nick Ebert, who decides to come back from Europe, signs a deal in Belleville. To my understanding, he had a place set. He was set to move in this week, and then boom, traded to the New York Rangers. And you know, not only does that affect him as a player, having to, you know, either go to New York or to Hartford, but for the team, Belleville finds itself with now just six defensemen and an injury-prone NHL club, and everything could be chaos here in the next week and a half, you know, if things don't go the right way. So there's so much to sort out for players, for coaches, for management early on in the season.
Absolutely. I think Nick Ebert's a perfect example. You know, he was in Europe last year, comes into training camp with Ottawa, plays there, so he's not even in Belleville yet. Comes down to Belleville, plays one game. Now he's traded. Now he's going to Hartford. You know, you can just, you know, if you think your own life, imagine that upheaval and that kind of a little bit of off the ice chaos that you have to manage. So I think for a player like him, he's a great example as well. And the remarkable thing with him is it's not the exception either. So players, I mean, if you look at the transaction page, you know, any given day, especially the first, let's say, 2 to 3 weeks of the opening open of the season, it's just remarkable. Players coming and going, and you know, we've just seen Edmonton. They've had that shuffle going with their defensemen up and back between Bakersfield and Edmonton, and that's not a small trip either. So
So
it's a little hectic, and you know, you can imagine the logistics of just trying to you know, manage your lineup night to night. Never mind trying to actually get some cohesion and get your systems in place. And you know, especially five teams this year have new head coaches, so there's that adjustment. So it's a little bit of a scramble at this time of the year. And you know, I think that's just a classic AHL, as I like to say, because you really never know what's next from day to day. And it certainly, I think it keeps all of us on our toes.
It's kind of like what's happening with this show. You know, you never know what's coming up day to day. And we're also trying to, you know, get our footing around the league and, you know, to find the hot stories early on in the season here. Let's talk about some of the on-ice product. There was a pretty big goaltending matchup early on in the weekend. The Cleveland Monsters are among the teams that are out to 2-0 starts. What stood out to you over the first couple of games so far this season?
Yeah, I'll start with that goaltending matchup. Hartford Wolfpack, the Rangers Farm Club, and the defending cup champion Charlotte Checkers. Their opening night matchup up in Hartford, featuring two of the top young goalies out there, Alex Nedeljkovic, who led Charlotte to the Calder Cup this past June, AHL Goalie of the Year. Really kind of had a dream season in so many different ways. Finds himself back from the Carolina Hurricanes after being in training camp with them. He was a little bit of a victim of circumstances after they acquired James Reimer. So it's a little bit of a tough break for him, but he's back in the American League, and he's going up against Igor Shesterkin, who's straight out of the KHL. And if you talk to people around the Rangers, presumed heir to King Henrik Lundqvist there in New York eventually. So the two of them went head-to-head opening night, and naturally it was a little bit of a shootout. So as these things tend to go in hockey. So I will say, in both goaltenders' defense, the defensive play was somewhat optional. But it was a 5-3 Hartford win, and Hartford looked really good. They looked a lot different than the team that we saw at the end of the season, especially last year, where they had pretty much just decimated their roster either via trades or recalls. And they looked like a team already looking really dangerous in the early going.
When we talked about that transition that Hartford has seen during last week's episode, and again, if you want to hear last week's episode, the inaugural debut of Around the A, you can do that on Apple Music, on Spotify, on Google Play, most places you can get your podcasts, or straight from the interweb at sportspodcastingnetwork.com. Yeah, I mean, we also mentioned the Cleveland Monsters, a team that surprised some, I think, on the Calder Cup playoff run last season. There were some here in Belleville thinking that, well, if we got in, which we didn't, based on the performance of Cleveland, a team that we had played pretty well against through the regular season, maybe we had a chance to go on a run like that. But I don't necessarily think that's the case. Cleveland's a pretty good team, and they seem to be building off of what they were able to do in the spring.
Yeah, that was an interesting team last year. The way they came in there, they were in a dogfight to the bitter end with the Belleville Senators, like you mentioned. And they come in the first round. They kind of did a mirror image of what the Columbus Blue Jackets, their parent club, did to the Tampa Bay Lightning. They knocked out the Syracuse Crunch pretty effectively and without a whole lot of difficulty. And that was Tampa Bay's affiliate, who had finished second overall in the league in the regular season. And Cleveland handled them quite well. Then they had a coaching change. They were knocked out in the second round by the Toronto Marlies. No shame in that. I mean, it's the Marlies we're talking about. Sure. So then they moved on from John Madden, the former NHL forward for all those seasons with the New Jersey Devils. And they brought in Mike Eaves, who has not coached in this league since 1993. So it was a 26-year gap between his time in this league, which I find fascinating. And I'm really looking forward to speaking to him later this season, just to know, to see how much this league has changed in 26 years. He was off at the University of Wisconsin for a number of years, became a really highly regarded college coach at one of the top programs in that level. And now he's back, at this stage of his career in the American Hockey League. So really interesting situation there. And they have some real good young talent coming in there from the Columbus system. And they went into Laval, back-to-back games. They knocked off 4 points. Real nice start to their season. And they'll start at home this week against that Syracuse Crunch team. So a little bit of a chance to renew acquaintances for both sides. So I'm looking forward to that later this week.
And you mentioned that Laval team. That's another club that's undergone a pretty good transition through the course of the summer, and I think in a lot of people's eyes, especially those who you talk to out Montreal Laval way, it was a bit of an underachieving opening weekend for them.
Yeah, it was. That's always a team I always feel there's more there. I felt that 2 years ago when they had such a disastrous season because they had on paper put together a pretty solid team. And then last year, they started off with a solid roster, and then injuries and recalls and all sorts of other issues hit them. And so here we are for a third crack at it. And, they have some real good young prospects in there. Keating Primo, a young goalie, Keith Primo's son coming out of the college ranks. They brought in Ryan Poehling, also from college, 25th overall pick a couple years back. He's certainly a player that, made a lot of noise his day. You have former AHL MVP Phil Veroni. You have Matthew Pekka, who I think Belleville fans will remember from his days in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. Charlie Lindgren, right down the list, Riley Barber, Josh Brook. So you have a real nice mix of veterans and some real solid prospects. They hit a little bit of turbulence in the early going. I do know one thing, Joel Bouchard there, for my money, the most intense head coach in the American Hockey League. I wouldn't want to be there at practice this week with the Laval Rockets because he's intense and he'll be on those players very early and often. So I look for a much better performance for them later this week.
A reminder that we have a chat with John Ferguson Jr. With the Boston Bruins and the Providence Bruins coming up in just a few moments. Before we get into that, let's touch on the Western Conference a little bit here, Pat. Iowa 2-0, San Antonio 2-0, Ontario and Stockton both 2-0. Pretty good starts for that foursome, and some of those California teams off and running here.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that just, California can be, when you're in the East, a little bit of a far off.
It's a dream. Let's be honest. It's a dream.
But yeah, you start there with the Ontario Reign. They're the LA Kings affiliate, about an hour outside of LA, home of the All-Star game this year. Pending Los Angeles traffic, that is.
Sure.
You have Cal Peterson in net there. He's the first winner of the AHL Player of the Week this season. 41 save shutout of the San Jose Barracuda on opening night. And then he had a 42 save night the following night. They won in overtime at Bakersfield. So this was a goalie who went through really rough season last year. Ontario had a really tough year. A lot of the problems with the LA Kings found their way down to the AHL club. He faced an average of almost 39 shots per game last year. Cool. So you can see where his season was last year. But this is a young player. He's 24 years old. Really solid prospect for the LA Kings. All things considered, his numbers weren't terrible last year. So I think he's going to be the eventual successor to Jonathan Quick there in LA. So he had a great start. And then you mentioned San Antonio, Stockton. San Antonio is the farm team for the defending Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues, who had a really busy offseason getting that San Antonio team on track. They feature a bright young head coach, Drew Bannister. I think a lot of OHL fans will remember him from his days in the Sioux. He's in his second season. And then Stockton, same thing as Calgary's affiliate. Good young club, a lot of players there. Who maybe in a different farm system would be on the NHL roster. So, and then it rounds out with the Iowa Wild, who finally made the playoffs last season after, for the first time since they came to Iowa from Houston back in 2013. So they got that barrier broken, and they look like a pretty solid club going into this year. So if I look around the Western Conference, I don't see any real weak teams. I see a lot of, much like last season, just a lot of really highly competitive clubs out there.
So a few teams out in the West, 2-0. Back in the East, also 2-0, are the Providence Bruins. They shut out the Lehigh Valley Phantoms to start the season. And then Brendan Gaunce, a former Belleville Bull, overtime winner to beat the Hershey Bears on October the 6th. And that's where you got a chance to catch up with John Ferguson.
Yeah, John Ferguson, he's a good talker to start with, and you always love that when you're interviewing somebody where you don't have to pull teeth to get answers. He gives you really really in depth, really precise, insightful feedback. As I said earlier, he's interesting in the sense that he has that old school foundation. Doing, I'm sure, no small part to his father, John Ferguson Sr., who I think if anybody, for some of our older listeners, certainly remember what he was. The stories of him with the Winnipeg Jets, his days there running that team were pretty legendary in Winnipeg when I was there. But he also has a lot of that new school mentality. He's a guy that's, really bright guy. He was real strong academic, figure back when he was playing at the college level at Providence College. And, he made his way up through the ranks, going through the agent route and then into the hockey management side. So he blends that old and the new together. And, I think he's learned a lot over the years. He's been in that high-pressure job of the GM seat with the Leafs, and now he's part of that Boston system. And every year, like we said, that Boston team has a number of Providence graduates. And, they put a very, scientific approach to it. They really try to have a methodical step-by-step approach to how they develop players. And you can't argue with the results every year. Like I said, you have a number of guys that are able to make that jump from Providence, step into that Boston lineup, and really make a difference.
And we will learn a little bit more about what it takes to have that kind of consistency right now with John Ferguson Jr. on Around the A.
As a man, executive who's been around this business a long time, what changes have you seen in terms of how players learn to become pros? Are they better equipped than they used to be, or is it different?
Well, there's more support than there ever has been. There's great science behind a lot of what they're being taught and shown and told. There's a greater group of support group. You know, it's not just development staff and training staff and you know, on the psychological side, the mental side, but sports science and obviously some data related to performance and on and off the ice. You know, we've, you know, our travel group, you know, you're talking about, you know, three coaches on the bench plus development director at any given time. You know, you got video coach, a couple on the ATC side, a couple on the equipment side. So the support from the organization surrounding these players and they're putting them in the best place to succeed and maximize whatever it is they do have, it's grown, and it's grown significantly.
The players that come into the system, are they different themselves from maybe 20, 25 years?
They are. I do think the industry itself is really adhering to greater skill development at a younger age. These players are learning the nutrition side, the sports science side, the preparation side. There's obviously, you know, more advanced equipment. They're skating faster, they're training better, and they're preparing better. But there really is nothing like learning how to be a pro at the pro level. And we take great pride in attempting to establish laboratory conditions to develop NHL players.
Providence was always ahead of the curve in having a nearby location with the NHL club. Everyone else has kind of bought into that now. Do you find that players in that situation don't feel as forgotten as they, you know, maybe if the farm team's on the other side of the country?
I do. It's important, it's critical in our estimation that the players that are down here see not just the light at the end of the tunnel, but experience it, sit beside guys who've been there and are gonna get there, and see guys succeed at the top level that were sitting right beside them. We're sitting in the exact same stall a year ago, 2 years ago. And we've had great success through the organization from top to bottom, deriving and producing and developing talent that not just helping us at the NHL level, but allows us at times to create assets that we may use to bring in other pieces. We had great contributions. We had 16 different players last year from Providence play in Boston. And to us, you know, that really, you know, emphasizes, you know, what we're doing well.
Along those lines, there's always been a distinctive Boston Bruins culture. You kind of know it when you see it. How do you infuse that down to the AHL club and get those guys to feel they're part of it?
Well, I mean, that comes, you know, right from the top. Obviously, Charlie Jacobs, Cam Neely, Don Sweeney. True Bruins, through and through, and make no mistake, they set the vision, the culture. The rest of us attempt to execute on that vision. We're learning every day. We like where we've been, we like where we're going, but the challenge is, the beauty of it is, hey, tomorrow's another day, next weekend we get more games, and we'll do what we need to do this week to get better.
This is such a transient league, though. How do you get that culture, you know, players coming going constantly year in, year out, even middle of the year? How do you get them get on board quickly?
We don't apologize for high standards. We take great pride in setting high standards. And that gets passed along, not just from our coaches, from our players, from our development staff, from top to bottom.
And then coaching-wise, Peter Laviolette, Mike Sullivan, Scott Gordon, right down the list, the alumni that come through the system on the NHL, what has always made this a good springboard to an NHL job for a coach?
Well, I just think there's a level of professionalism that is inherent in the organization. And the people who've been here before carry that torch on. We've enjoyed great developmental consistency. Bruce Cassidy, in my time here, through to Kevin Dean, on a Jay Leach. Each one of those guys were assistants for the guys ahead of them. Bruce did that for Claude before he took over. So that continuity and be able to maintain the practice pace that's been developed. Those are keys for us, and it allows us as an organization to integrate people and keep them at a high level right out of the gate.
Last thing, Jay Leach, as a coach, he was such a respected captain in this league for a long time. What kind of growth have you seen from him from the time he stepped behind the bench now?
He's made great strides. He really has. He came in and made a commitment to this organization to come over as an assistant coach, along with Kevin Dean, who was Bruce's assistant for a number of years. He's up there with Bruce now. People like Jamie Langenbrunner, Jay Pandolfo, Joe Sacco. There's great continuity in the organization. Jay comes in, he learns, and we promote it from within. And, he's learned how to run his own bench. He got a good taste of that before in Wilkes-Barre. He's got a greater taste now. And, he was behind the All-Star bench his first year behind the bench. And we as a group strive to get better every day, and he's no different.
Okay, thank you very much. Really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Thank you.
That's John Ferguson Jr. On Around the A, the assistant general manager of the Boston Bruins and the Providence Bruins. You're listening to Around the A with David Foote and Patrick Williams. Again, you can find us on social media now, Twitter and Instagram, at Around the A Pod. And you can listen to the podcast on Apple Music, on Spotify, on Google Play, on the sportspodcastingnetwork.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. John Ferguson Jr. He's quite the guy.
He certainly is, yeah. It's funny, you speak with him and you almost feel like it's a little bit of a flashback, to some of the guys I remember when I was starting out, just how they just had that kind of that old school demeanor about them. There's not a lot of pretentiousness, that's for sure. Certainly with him, he's a really direct speaker. He'll tell you exactly what's on his mind. I find him every time I've ever spoken with him, I find that his answers are just very thoughtful. And, I find that I learn a lot from him. And he's the kind of guy that he's seen it all in this business. There's not much I think that you're going to put past him, that he hasn't already seen and probably experienced before. And, like we said, being in that Leafs GM chair for 5 years, I think that will age anybody, and certainly in terms of learning how to handle pressure, learning how to maybe block out some of the noise, I think he's very good with that. He's a real key figure in that Boston management team with Don Sweeney, Cam Neely, and so on. So he's a real trusted advisor in that regard, and I think you just learn a lot speaking from him. So I was really happy to talk to him. He was great. He was in a good mood too. His Providence team had just had a really nice weekend, like we said, back-to-back wins.
Yeah.
And they'll go home now this weekend. And that's looking like another good team. Number of top prospects right down the list, a little bit of everything. So that's a good team. Definitely a team to keep an eye on all season long.
Yeah, it's amazing how you can relax a little bit after you've come out of the Toronto GM job.
Yes. The American Hockey League, one thing you can say for sure is a little bit less pressure media-wise. You see these guys, they let their hair down a little bit they're able to, I think, just relax a little bit and just be a little bit more open. And it's one of the things, having worked at both levels, I really like the media aspect of the American Hockey League. Is there's a little bit more, you get to know management, coaches, players a little bit more on a one-to-one level, whereas I find in the NHL, it's those scrums that we see on TV all the time with, 20 different microphones, with a player, and it's kind of they're just saying whatever, comes off the top of their head. So I find the answers down here in many ways a lot more thoughtful, a lot more insightful.
I feel like a lot more honest too. Like coaches that I've dealt with, especially, they seem to tell it how it is. Nobody's trying to sugarcoat it for the fan base or anything like that. There's people at the NHL level are lying necessarily, but there's a lot more thought, I think, into that goes into the perception that's going to come from comments because of that, tight media coverage. Whereas here in the AHL, it's no secret that it's a developmental league and everybody's developing. And I think that a lot of the coaches and executives understand that. And for us as journalists and, you know, the media that cover the league, it can make our job that much more fun and that much easier when you've got people who are willing to talk to you like John Ferguson Jr. did, or, you know, like most coaches or executives in this league do.
Yeah, I agree. I find that the trust level is a lot better, mm-hmm. you know, because precisely it is a smaller media contingent. So you're able to build that trust level one-on-one conversations. They see you at the rink, you see them, you get to know them as a little bit more than just kind of a faceless either a reporter from his perspective or you know, I'm just looking in the NHL like another player, you know, and it's just another name that you're trying to check off a list. So it's a little bit more of that one-on-one relationship that you can get, and they understand that you're not simply trying to have a gotcha moment, and put it up on national television. So I think they open up a little bit more, and they're able to give you a little bit more of a peek behind the curtain of how the hockey business works, how the player development business works. And I find that they're really helpful, and a lot of them are eager to share their knowledge. I've had coaches who will really try to explain to me some of the, thinking that they do with their lineups, with their systems and whatever other decisions they have, they're willing to share. And, I find it just a really good resource to be able to tap into.
Yeah, it's a learning experience for the players. It can be for younger media members like myself. Again, I'm only in my third year covering the American Hockey League. And while I'm, I've covered hockey for long enough now that I've, figured out a lot of the basics, there's a lot of stuff that I think people don't understand or realize about the American Hockey League, including some of the, different roster rules and things like that. One of them that I was surprised about last year was the veteran rule. If you wanted to equate it to junior hockey for fans who may be, making the jump to our show from following junior hockey a lot, you can only have so many overage players on your roster. And in the American Hockey League, it's essentially the same thing, but it's not based on your age. It's based on how many games you've played as a professional. So of your 18 skaters, not counting two goalies, teams can dress at least 13 development players. And of those 13, 12 must have played in 260 or fewer professional games. Now, that's not just AHL, NHL. That counts Europe as well. And one of those players must have played 320 or fewer. So to add another wrinkle into what management has to do, you got to pay attention to how many games guys have played to make sure you stay under those limits.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. I think your analogy to the CHL is a perfect one with overage. I think it operates in a lot of the same fashion. I think the wrinkle is like that sometimes, especially here in training camp, is now you have maybe some NHL type players who were surprise cuts and they find themselves down in the American Hockey League, and they are very much qualified as veterans. So if you were a veteran AHL player who signed in, let's say, Utica, and all of a sudden, two or three players who are also now qualified as veterans come down from the Canucks, all of a sudden, you're kind of getting bumped for playing time. So it's something that both players and their agents, as well as general managers, have to be very mindful of. I think the last thing you want is a lot of veteran players sitting around not able to play. And the whole basis for the rule, it comes right back down to development. They want players that are able to to, you know, if you're a young player coming in, they don't want you getting bumped out necessarily by an older player whose NHL window is not really there anymore. So that mindset is paramount. And I think it's one of the things that really made the AHL able to become the top developmental league for the NHL. Now, there's always the flip side of that is you don't want young players coming in and not having to compete for ice time at all. Mm-hmm. So I think most teams do want to have some really competitive veterans that are able to come in there and push those young guys for ice time, as well as give them good line mates. I mean, I think if you're bringing in, let's say, a first round left wing coming in as a rookie, you want him to be able to play with some quality line mates. And they very well may be older players, guys who maybe are 27, 28 years old, have some NHL time, and certainly at the American League level are top end players. So it's a little bit of a cat and mouse game in that regard. You have to really manage your rosters carefully. There aren't roster limits per se in the American Hockey League in terms of like the 23-man NHL roster, but they exist both in terms of certainly in the sense of you don't want a really heavy roster where you have a lot of guys sitting around not playing, getting grumpy, and maybe not being the best teammate they can be. So teams have to be very mindful of that, and you know, it's something. Then I think there's always some tension with that simply because of, I think from a fan standpoint, they like some of those players that come back year after year, someone that they can get to know. It can be hard, I think, sometimes to balance that consideration with developmental considerations, you know, because let's be honest, this is a business off the ice as well. Mm-hmm. You have to make it appealing for fans. I think that's something that is sometimes forgotten, that yes, it's all about development down here, but there's also the matter of selling tickets, and fans, just like at any other level, they come to see hits, they come to see goals, they come to see good competitive games, everything that any other hockey fan wants to see, and they're not just here necessarily to see development. So you have to kind of find that balance. You want to have a good competitive team, you want to have a winning team, so you don't want to just go heavy on all rookies or second year guys. And veterans can help you, especially at this stage of the year, early in the season, as some of those young guys, those young prospects are finding their way through, the early going. Those veterans can do a lot of the heavy lifting at this time. So it's a big part of the league. It's one of the fundamental, I think, if I was trying to give somebody a crash course on the American Hockey League, it's one of the first things that they really need to know.
Absolutely. And, perhaps throughout the course of this season, maybe we'll try to do that each week. We'll try to pull one random fact or tidbit about the league that people may not be aware of, and try to teach people a little bit more about how things work. Getting close on time here on episode number 2 of Around the A with David Foote and Patrick Williams. But before we go, we would be remiss if we did not mention the other big headline out of the league this past week, and that is the announcement of the retirement of longtime goaltender Michael Layton. Obviously, had his time in the National Hockey League, but made a pretty big impact in the American League as well.
Yeah, I almost say the Forrest Gump of the hockey world for a long time, in the sense that he saw a little bit of everything. He used everything from being a young up-and-coming prospect to being a goalie with the Philadelphia Flyers, going to Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final back in 2010. He tried Europe for a season, and then he came back and kind of became that veteran mentor guy who would come in and bring along the young prospect goalie partner with him. So he saw a little bit of everything. I always found him to be a really insightful interview. I think I've said before, I think he would make a fantastic goalie development coach. He's seen it all. More importantly, he's experienced. So I think he would be the type of player who could bring along a young goalie, because that, I think, more than any other position, is the most tumultuous position for young American League players, simply because it can be a rough introduction coming up from lower levels. And he's been through it all. He played 18 pro seasons. He played 507 regular season games, which is seventh overall in AHL history, fifth all-time in victories, and he has the most shutouts ever by an NHL goalie. So he's been everything from an all-rookie team member to a veteran guy. And he's also had 100-plus games in the NHL. So he's seen it all. He's experienced it all. And, you know, a tremendous career by any definition. And I think certainly the type of guy that will be a very quick introduction or induction into the American Hockey League Hall of Fame when that time comes, because he had a fantastic career. Not bad for a sixth-round pick 20 years ago.
Yeah. Five-time AHL All-Star as well, just the cherry on top of that outstanding resume. Yeah, great career for Michael Layton, and we obviously wish him all the best in the next phase of his post-hockey life as he moves on. That's going to do it, I think, just about for episode number 2 of Around the A. Again, we'll remind you that you can get us on Apple Music, on Google Play, on Spotify, at thesportspodcastingnetwork.com if you're just sitting at your desk and want to have a listen. Don't forget to interact with us as well at Around the A Pod on Instagram and on Twitter. Again, we'd love some feedback from the listeners, what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to see or hear from us, because again, this is still a pretty new thing for us, and we really want to make sure that we're putting out something that people are enjoying listening to.
Absolutely. I think fans, you know, just like, you know, if we were a team, you know, we count on fan support. You know, we want to hear their feedback. We want to know what they like, what they don't like, and who they like to hear. You know, we have between the two of us, a pretty deep Rolodex, if you will, of players and management and coaches. So if you have an idea out there, we'd love to hear it. I think certainly we'll try our very best to get them. And we have a pretty good shot, I think, to get them. I think, as we said, one of the best parts of the American Hockey League is this accessibility media-wise. And you know, players, coaches, management, they're all willing to talk.
And I would say we are a team. You know, you're the veteran guy. I'm the up and coming rookie. You know, we're it's a pretty good
yeah,
combo.
Yeah, but you are the point man on the blue line who has to eat the big minutes and kind of steer the ship and keep things on track. Because if it was left up to me, I'd probably still be talking tomorrow. So, you know, so yes, that's what you bring to the table. And I don't think we'd be very far without you, for sure.
Lots of discussion, but it's always insightful, and that's part of the reason why we're doing this. I hope you enjoyed the show this week, everyone. We will talk to you next week on Around the A, again, at Around the A Pod, and to find us wherever you get your podcast and at thesportspodcastingnetwork.com.
Thanks for listening to Around the A. Be sure to tune in again next week. Find Around the A on the Sports Podcasting Network, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Interact with us on social media. Give us your thoughts using the hashtag Around the A and follow us at Around the A Pod.